Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. It's the middle of summer, or winter if you're down south, and we are having an continuingly interesting times, and the news out of everywhere is definitely interesting. We are not closing the borders down here in Finland, but we're basically making everyone go through rough quarantine if they enter the country, and I'm going to be doing that because I'm going to France for a week and then coming back. It's going to be weird because I won't be able to walk around in Helsinki as I'm back from France. Anyway, I'm Patrick Beja, and in this show we usually get people from different countries of the world to talk about the news, which would have been quarantine stuff, I guess. But that's not what we're doing today. We have a special episode, and we're going to be talking about Kenya. And I am so glad to be welcoming Paula Rogo to the show to talk about, well, where she lives. Hey, Paula, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you could be on the show because you do so many interesting things, and I'm really looking forward to you educating me about how Kenya is not actually what I picture it to be from the movies and the TV that I watch. Or maybe it is. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe.
Could you introduce yourself for the audience?
Yes, hello everyone. My name is Paula Rogo. I am Kenyan American, mostly Kenyan though the American part might show up in my accent. And I'm based in Nairobi, Kenya, here in East Africa, where we're on the equator, so it's always good weather this side of the world. But right now I'm in Western Kenya in Kisumu. Ever since we had the lockdown in Kenya due to COVID, I was moved to the western part of the country where my family's from. So I'm by the lake, eating a lot of fish and sort of waiting out. I don't know how long COVID will be, but that's where I am at this point. And I'm a journalist and media entrepreneur, is what I do with what pays the bills.
And you're very much into podcasting as well. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit further down the line. You know what? Let's start with the COVID situation. I usually try to do these specials about life on the ground in different countries in general, but I think this might be enlightening in all areas. But so what's the situation with COVID in Kenya? We were suspecting when it hit the West, you know, Europe and the US, a few months ago, that it would travel to Africa and other parts of the world, and it might be more difficult to contain there. How's the situation been for you?
Yeah, the situation has been interesting. When COVID, the rumors of COVID was first coming out earlier in the year, I was in the middle of putting together a big festival here in my country, the first podcast festival in Africa called Africa Podfest. So I was busy, let's say. And I only really started to hear about COVID because I have a sister who is a doctor in New York. So when things were getting hectic there, I started to hear things about it. And then we had a lot of people flying into Kenya for the festival from all over the world. And I remember one of our sponsors asking, this was maybe late February, are you prepared for COVID? And at the time, my co-founders and I were like, COVID, what? And at the time, it was still very much a Chinese or Asian problem at that time, from what I remember. So we and there'd be no cases in Kenya, no cases in Africa at all that we knew of at the time. And so I remember thinking, oh, what a strange question to ask about COVID. And then a few weeks later, 5 days before this festival I told you about, we got our first case. And from there, the Kenyan government put down a mandate against big events in Nairobi. And so we had to cancel the event. And from there, things picked up very quickly. And the interesting thing about COVID in Kenya, and I think a lot of African countries have experienced this, is because it tended to come through foreigners or people who have flown into the country, it was seen as an upper class / foreigner problem and disease.
And so, meaning that it wasn't a concern for other parts of the population? They felt they weren't really, at risk?
Right. It's not their problem. It was socioeconomically, why is this their problem when it's people who get to fly in and out of the country that have this problem? So even the first cases were coming from quite wealthier neighborhoods in the city. When the government started to shut things down, you know, school was closed, schools were canceled. There was then eventually a lockdown between different cities in Kenya, the capital and some cities on the coast. A lot of people who were not affected by it felt that their lives were being changed by this virus, supposed virus. And at the time, the news was coming from Europe, right? We're hearing about what's happening in Italy and then maybe what's happening also in New York at that particular time. And it felt so distant from our lives. But then everything was stopping. And then people were losing their jobs and the economy was changing because of it. And even today, as we manage the virus, we've maybe had about like 27,000 cases, and we're about a population of 52 million. So 27,000 cases, about 400 deaths. It still, for some people, feels very distant, but then it's this virus that has changed our lives completely. So I think people are still grappling with what it means, and also the government response as well. Because there's not been mass testing, so we don't know really how bad things are. So I think, like everyone else in the world, we're just figuring it out as we go.
It's surprisingly, I think, reassuring. It's reassuring that it's surprisingly similar to how things went for us as well. That sentiment that you're describing of, oh, it's the Chinese thing that, and we're laughing it off, kind of, and that moment in late February, early March, where everyone else woke up and it was like, oh crap, wait, what? It's exactly how, what we went through.
Exactly, and the virus keeps changing, and there's new information about it, and now supposedly the Russians have come out with the vaccine, and you know, but it affects our everyday lives. And I think I think the hard thing is watching people lose their jobs. I don't know if that's been the same where you are, but watching people lose their incomes, their jobs, watching, I have friends who are mothers whose children, because now the schools are closed for the rest of the year. So they have their daytime, their full-time job, they have, and then their kids are home, and you know, that struggle of homeschooling, keeping up your job remotely, and then also taking care of the house. So it's just been an adjustment. I think what's hard is to imagine that we're going to be like this for a very long time.
Yeah. For us in France and Finland, which are my two main home bases, I think there's less, I mean, obviously it's changing everything and affecting everyone, and in the ways that you're describing, is makes it a little bit less catastrophic for us on a personal level, I think, is that we have such solid social safety nets. So, of course, mm-hmm. you might lose your job, but even that is less likely because it's not as easy to, you know, we have protections against these things. But also, yeah. even if you do, you're not left without any form of income, and you still have social security and healthcare. You know, these kinds of things are taken care of anyway. So that's mm-hmm. a little bit less maybe traumatic for us than even in the US, and I'm guessing in Kenya as well.
I think that's what's also been difficult. We don't have a lot of those social safety nets here. And, you know, for example, there's been a mass a lot of people have left the capital to go back to their rural homes because it's cheaper to maintain your lifestyle outside the capital city, right? You can, a lot of people do their own farming. So at least you have access to food. You know, there's a period in time when Nairobi was locked down and families from what we say upcountry, from the rural parts of the country, were sending food to their relatives in the capital. Because at least—
Do you mean there were food shortages?
Not that there were food shortages. People can't afford food.
Oh,
meaning,
wow.
You know,
okay.
They've lost jobs. A lot of people live day to day, paycheck to paycheck within Kenya, daily labor and so forth. And a lot of that was cut off when people started having to quarantine. And so affording basic food also became quite difficult. So it wasn't that there was food. And so also prices were going up. Because also transportation of food was delayed. It's a whole economic sort of system,
of course,
around that. And a lot of people just couldn't afford it. And so once Nairobi opened up, because it was locked down for a couple of months, a lot of people have left the capital, also with their children, since children are now home and they're back in their rural homes for as long as this would need to be.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear some of the things you said, which maybe this is a comment on the US, but it's so similar to some of the things that some American friends have been telling me, which we don't really have to worry about as much, the living paycheck to paycheck. And I'm sure, you know, some people in Finland and France have financial difficulties as well, but not to the same extent. I don't know what it says about either the US or Kenya that the situation is similar, but for some people, but yeah.
Yeah. And I think I'll add also, like, despite that, it's easier to navigate Kenya, right? Yes, we don't have the social sort of nets to pick you up when things go wrong, but also the ability to sort of work within the system and to hustle is easier in Kenya than it is in the US from my experience. So you can do a lot with a little here in a way you can't in the US.
What do you
mean?
I
don't know if that makes sense.
Could you give us an example maybe to illustrate?
Right. So because there's so many different socioeconomic levels, it's easy to adjust your lifestyle to the different economic levels, if that makes sense. So, for example, if your paycheck has been, if you're not getting the amount of money you usually get, instead of going to shop at the supermarket, you can go to a local market that's much cheaper, or you can buy your goods outside the city that's much cheaper. This is just a way to sort of navigate life around survival that's a little bit easier to do here. And in the US, you know, here's your supermarket that you go to, and either you can afford it or you can't.
Right.
That sort of, you know, even the ability to be able to leave the city and move back to your rural home, there's stronger family structures that also work as nets for you here.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Unlike the US. Yeah. I hope that makes sense. That
yeah, completely. It's funny because I really have a different, you know, a different perspective here in Finland than I would have had if I had stayed in France. Because, so for those who don't know, my wife is Finnish. And we moved to Finland a few years ago and then moved to her family country home a couple of years ago. And she's now, you know, started growing stuff on, in the garden, and we've eaten some of the vegetables that she's been growing for months. And and there are just people selling stuff that they're growing here on the side of the road as a tiny, you know, it's a tiny village, but they put stuff and you pay, you put the money in the box and go away with a bunch of tomatoes. It's really cool. But I was talking to her yesterday, I think, and I was looking at the kale she had grown. So hipster, right? But like the kale and the strawberries and the carrots and the lettuce. And I was like, I know intellectually that you put seeds in the ground and then you pour water on them and then it makes stuff that you can eat. But looking at it actually happening is some kind of magical spell that shouldn't exist. You know, it's I don't know, it's a bit weird, but that's me because I'm a city boy. But so we have the same kind of dynamic here where people have, there are a lot of people who have country homes and they go away to their country home, and there's almost the same kind of dynamic that you're describing.
And I agree, there's something about eating food where you have toiled for it, you know. You planted it and you saw it grow and you watered it and you made sure it was in the right light and you picked the time to harvest it and it was a good harvest, and then now I cook it and eat it. I don't know. It's just something, it really connects you to the earth in a way that is just earthy and makes the food even more delicious because it's your food.
Really. Oh, it's definitely more delicious. That is for certain. Like the tomatoes we get on that little farm just outside the village is god, they're like candy. It's so good. But anyway, you know, it's funny because a lot of people I think have been feeling this from forced through the COVID thing, and maybe it's a little bit closer for you guys in Kenya than it is for us in Finland, or definitely in France. But it's interesting that it's forcing us to do this and seek more independence on a national level for sure, but maybe even on a personal level. But so that's looking at things from the prism of COVID. But you also lived in the US for a long time, and so I think if I ask you the standard dumb question that I always ask people on these specials, which is, you know, if can you paint me a picture of what the country actually, life in the country actually is, versus what I, as a dumb person who only knows Kenya through maybe movies, maybe, I'm not saying it's the case, but maybe I don't really understand which country is where in the big, like, block country of Africa, right? It's Africa. It's the country of Africa. It's in there somewhere. Like, can you paint a picture of what life is like for you in a daily basis?
In Kenya, correct?
Yes, of course, of course. Yes, not the fictional country of Africa, Kenya.
Yeah. You know, Kenya is it's a melange of so many different cultures. I actually think it's one of the most underrated, Nairobi is one of the most underrated cities in Africa, because it's very cosmopolitan. And I think it's underrated because Kenyans are not good at PR. I really think so. Everyone talks about Johannesburg and Lagos and, you know, all these big cities. But Kenya is the type of city where expats from other countries move here, maybe for work or so forth, and then they don't leave. And they don't want to leave because their people are friendly and open, sometimes a little bit too open, and welcoming to others. And the weather is great. I'm sorry, just the background.
It's okay. We can hear the family in the background putting the dishes away. That's what we do on this show. We get actual people. So keep going. It's fine.
It's a place that is very welcoming to people from all over because we're such a multicultural country. We were colonized by the British, who brought also a lot of Indians to Kenya for labor. We have many tribes, different languages. So we're very tolerant of each other and each other's religions and each other's tribal cultures. But it's also a very cosmopolitan city. And I like to say Nairobi, whatever you need to find, you will find it in Nairobi. There's a place or someone who's selling it in this city, which makes it, and I don't know, because you're French, I'm going to use Dakar as a good example.
Okay.
Dakar is very, from what I've heard, a lot of people compare Nairobi to Dakar because of the culture, about how welcoming they are, how easy.
Hello, you're back from your phone because you lost electricity. So again, my dumb question is that you were talking about Dakar and the differences between Nairobi, and we'll get back to that. But yes. Do you often have electricity issues in the infrastructure in the country?
No, not really. I think maybe we'll lose electricity. Gosh, maybe sometimes it's as much as twice a month. Sometimes you won't lose electricity in a month. It just sort of depends. And it tends to come back within an hour or two if it happens. So it's not a problem. And to the point where, say, for example, in Accra, I think it's in Ghana, where everyone must have a generator because electricity is lost all the time. But in Kenya, I don't think it's as much of a problem. We were just unlucky today with this call.
Well, it gives us an opportunity to talk about other things. So I take it as a good thing. So you were telling us about the differences between Nairobi and Dakar.
Yeah, I've never been to Dakar. A lot of people tell me, oh, it's like Dakar. It's the most similar city. So if you have Francophone listeners who are familiar at least with the stereotype of Senegal and Dakar, Nairobi and Kenya is supposedly very similar. But the one thing about Kenyans is we're extremely hardworking. We're hustlers. Everyone has three businesses. You have your main job, your side job, and then your new entrepreneurial idea. Mostly because it's an expensive city, very expensive. So you need multiple streams of income. But I'm always so in awe of how people can juggle being a banker, but also a real estate agent, but also sells books on the side and things like that. Very, very much a hustler mentality. And then also, I think we're so friendly because we're a tourism country. Tourism is huge in Kenya. Many of people have heard of the Masai Mara. They've heard of our beautiful beaches. Right now, the big wildebeest migration happening. The best time to come for a safari in Kenya is now. And right now, no one is there because of COVID, which is affecting our tourism. But a lot of locals are trying to explore our country as well. So we're really blessed because we're on the equator. So it's good weather year round. We have lakes and we have a beautiful coast and we have all kinds of landscapes. So we're just a very lucky country where it's an easy place to come live and to enjoy growing up if you're lucky enough to have the advantages to enjoy the things that are here.
So many questions that come to me with what you're saying here. And I'm going to start with the dumbest one because I think a lot of our audience might not understand it, me included. When I think about, you know, Kenya / Africa, because again, I'm genuinely dumb, My first question is the standard of living, or, you know, the poverty and these questions. And when you're talking about everyone has three jobs, you're describing, you know, you're a banker and a real estate agent and selling books. Yeah. When what I would imagine is, you know, people who are coming from the country trying to sell their vegetables on the side of the road.
Yeah.
So I guess that I don't know if there's a question in there, but what's the reality of the development, social, you know, class aspect of the country? Is it a lot of poverty? Is it a lot of development? Because I also have a feeling that my image is rooted in the 80s when I grew up, 80s and 90s, and that's not really how things are anymore.
Right. As in Kenya is it's also Nairobi and Kenya, it's a country of two lives, really. There's extreme wealth. Some of the wealthier is the type that is almost disgusting. It's just extreme wealth. And there are parts within Kenya where you come and you won't even feel like you're in Africa. And there are some people who their lifestyles mean they don't have to interact with what the majority of the population experiences. And there's also extreme poverty. We are still a third world country at the end of the day. And so there's those two things exist. From what I was telling you, how my life is, some of the references I've made, obviously, I'm probably on the higher end of life here in Kenya. And I acknowledge that and I recognize my particular privileges around it, and how I'm able to also move and navigate. I get to enjoy both. My parents have done very well in Kenya. They're both scientists. My dad's a doctor. My mom's a scientist, worked really hard to get what they wanted. But then I also have the privilege of having lived abroad for as long as I have and what then comes with that. But I also recognize my life is very different from, and it's, I even feel strange saying the everyday Kenyan, because what does that mean? There's so many different socioeconomic classes and different ways that people gain and receive money. And I think when I say everyone has three jobs, I don't think it matters what socioeconomic level. The need to have a safety net is part of why everyone hustles for three jobs, even if you're on the wealthier end of the spectrum. I think what happens is a lot of Africans get frustrated with the image of Africa, like an image from what it was in the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. They get very frustrated. That there's this one narrative, one idea of what Africa is. It's just poverty. It's just lions, you know, very, very specific stereotypical things. And we are all those things, but we are also so much more. It's as if all I said about the French was a baguette, the guy on the bicycle with the striped shirt and the hat. And say that's France. Of course, that's ridiculous. But we get that same stereotype put on us consistently. And it really hasn't changed much since then. So I think a lot of people get frustrated. And what happens is when a lot of people land in different countries in Africa, and we're 54 countries. So I'm speaking for a lot of people here. And we're so different from even our neighbors, Tanzania and Uganda, let alone what's happening in the rest of Africa. So I think when people land, they, even if they think they know what Africa is, they get very, very surprised by certain countries, and other countries sometimes fit the stereotype, but we're very much beyond some of these stereotypes that you hear.
You know, it's funny because I think when I think about Africa and everything I don't know there, I get a feeling that maybe to an extent that is what some people from the US feel when they think about Europe. You know, it's like, I don't really know, like I've heard, I know France and I know the UK, but I'm not even necessarily sure where which is where and what makes it so different from one to the other. And I get frustrated about this a little bit. I'm like, I know where, you know, California is. You could know where, anyway, California might be the the one that I know best.
Yeah.
But so if I was to take a plane today and land in Nairobi, what do you think would be, as a European, the things that would either, you know, surprise me the most, or maybe not surprise me when I get into the city?
Right. The first thing that will surprise you, and you'll get it as soon as you leave the airport, is the traffic. It's really bad. You'll probably spend more time in traffic than you will anywhere else while you're in Nairobi. And it always shocks people. It even shocks me when I've left for a bit and come back, about how bad the traffic can be and how you can really spend a majority of your life in your car waiting. So that's a big surprise. I think also people get very surprised. From even the friends who've come to visit me, they say, oh, I'm looking for the authentic Africa. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. They're like, you know, the authentic. And I'm like, well, we're a city. What do you expect from us? We have roads, we have skyscrapers. You know, I'm not sure what you mean. And I think they also adjust to that it's like anywhere else in the world where it can be cosmopolitan.
Maybe some people expect kind of to have the, you know, savanna with gazelles just outside the city. But it's interesting what you're saying. It's skyscrapers. Not that I wouldn't expect there to be skyscrapers, but it's compared to an American city, it's just a city. Maybe there's, I would venture the dumb guess of saying there's more sand, but maybe that's not even the case. It's just
there's
a city.
Not even. It's a concrete jungle. There's more concrete than green space, at least in Nairobi. And once you leave the capital, of course, you'll see more of these things. And we are one of the only cities in the world that has a national park in it. So you can go see your gazelles and your lion. You know, you can go see those things because we have a national park within the country, within the city. But it's a city. It's really hard to explain more than just it's what you expect within a city. The traffic, the day to day, the 24 hours, the nightlife, all those things. We have all of that here, but we're still also, but also. Within that, there are moments where you realize that it is third world, right? You'll be in traffic, but someone will come up to your window and ask for money, you know, or
we get that in Paris as well. So it's not, you know,
right? It's interesting. When I said there are some people who move to Kenya, expats who move to Kenya and don't leave, there's a level of lifestyle you can have here that's even better than the U.S. and Europe, because you might have access to help, cheaper labor. You know, you might have a nanny, house help, a gardener, like big house, you know, that kind of lifestyle that's a little different, that because of that maybe the euro or the dollar stretches further here. And so why go back and struggle or just have a different lifestyle back at home?
So
people get surprised by that. I think also our cuisine surprises people. We do have a cuisine, but it's not as specific as one would say Ethiopian food or Nigerian food. We were colonized by the British, so there are some Britishisms, European-esque things that you will notice in Kenya, but we also have a very strong Indian population. So chapati and bhajias, really? And things that are very sort of Indian are here in Kenya. I thought chai was a Kenyan word. Chai is the word for tea, Swahili for tea. And I was shocked to realize chai actually originates from India. So it's very much like in the culture and the population. And then just the beauty, I think they expect the beauty. I don't think they're surprised by it. It's a melange of very different things. But also if you're looking for the poverty, you will find it. Mm. If you're looking for the wealth, you will find it. If you're looking for whatever stereotype, you will find it. It's there. It's just mixed up with so many other things as well.
Mm. All right. So again, to kind of get a somewhat precise picture of what it would be, you're saying that you can get anything and that expats are just live there with certain standards of living. I'm going to ask questions about what I'm interested in, but if you want to buy a computer, if you want to buy an iPhone, if you want to have a good internet connection, these kinds of things, mm-hmm. is it easy? Is it readily available? Or do you have to struggle a little bit to get them?
I can tell you which store, which mall, which anything to go get it. I can send you, here's my guy, call him, he'll get this for you. In fact, Kenya has Kenya is also called the Silicon Savannah, right? It's very tech savvy. And we have some of the best internet in the world in Kenya. And I think I will always find my internet better in Kenya, actually, than I do in the U.S. I'm always like, it's so slow when I'm in the U.S. Much faster, much speedier. We have some of the best sort of digital financial technology in the world. We have a payment system called M-Pesa. Pesa means money, so sort of digital money, where I can leave the house with just my phone and no money, and I'm okay for the day, right? Mm-hmm. Not just me, and wherever not just in the city, anywhere in Kenya, any of the rural areas, I can just have my phone and I can do digital transactions with my bank, with my M-Pesa account. And it's unmatched. I haven't seen anything like this in the US or in Europe. With how digital money and digital finance happens here. And I think that also shocks people when they come and they love it. And it's an adjustment. And every time I leave Kenya, I'm like, oh, I have to carry my wallet. Oh, I have to carry cash. I have to carry my card. When in Kenya, I really don't need to be able to do that at all.
Mm. Yeah, it's still very patchwork, and it started in the last few years, the digital payment systems, and it's still, you have to link your credit card to your payment system from your phone manufacturer usually, and it's a bit of it's not easy. And M-Pesa, my understanding is that it's expanding, it's been expanding, it's been there for many years, and it's expanding throughout Africa, and massive thing.
In the few minutes I was offline with you, when the electricity left, I quickly bought internet in that time.
Oh, really?
I bought internet data on my phone and I upgraded it because I knew I had to call you to make sure the connection was good. And it took longer, I think, because I didn't realize the electricity had left, right? And so I was like, oh, is that what it is? Quickly. And then I was able to connect with you. Pull that from my bank account, sent it to the phone company, and just happened very quickly.
So with the pictures you're painting with malls and skyscrapers and a lot of traffic and the concrete of a city, and then you're also saying that there's a lot of people going to their rural homes, is it fair to assume that it's the juxtaposition of very quickly urbanized areas and capital and maybe other cities, and then if you leave those cities, you're gonna it's gonna be very rural, outside of them? Or is it also do you have the infrastructure, for example, of the roads and the electricity and the communication infrastructure there as well?
Yeah, as in they are, it depends on where you are in the the country. I like to believe most parts of, as in roads, sure, you can access pretty much a majority of the country by road or by air. There's options there. Because also domestic travel is quite affordable, air travel as well. I think, of course, any city is a city. And we have other major cities also outside of Nairobi. So there's Kisumu, where I am, but it's right by the lake and it's closer to Uganda. There's Mombasa, which is our port on the Indian Ocean, sort of a port city, the second largest in Kenya. There's a lot of smaller towns where it's not the big guy that is Nairobi, but life is still bustling and even sometimes because we're quite a tribal country, and so there's some people who've never been to parts of the country because they're from a particular tribal region, and so when they leave the city, they go back maybe to their tribal home, like I've done. And there's some people who come to Kisumu and are surprised. Wow, it's so developed. Who are Kenyans themselves. In the parts of the country, I can go and be like, oh, I didn't expect this from this part of the country. So I think it's not just foreigners who sometimes stereotype Kenya. I think also maybe sometimes some Kenyans are surprised by what's in their country. Mm. And I think it all just comes down to the media of... because we also consume the media you consume. And so if the media says Africa or Kenya is this way, we also sometimes, if we haven't had the opportunity to travel, can believe what we see as well. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. I never thought of the fact that maybe you would have your image of your own country shaped a little bit to an extent by the world is so... world defied these days that you get access to the same content that we do. Actually, on that note, a very dumb question again. Do you have and use things like YouTube or Netflix for content consumption, or is it not very popular there?
Everyone has YouTube. Everyone has Facebook. Everyone has all these things. Netflix is here. There's even Netflix Africa specific content that Netflix has been producing of late. So shows that are created and filmed and shot within Africa for Africans that Netflix has been working around. We have other sort of content providers that are locally based, so that are not Netflix. we have it all. We have. And if we don't, we have VPN. So we don't have Spotify, but with a VPN, you can get Spotify, you know, things like that. And so like I said, we're the Silicon Savannah. We're very tech savvy here in Kenya. So anything you're using, we probably use as well.
It's such, you know, the idea that anyone in the world can... And I'm sure to an extent some of the interests might vary depending on the countries, but also there are some things that are very common. You know, you have access to YouTube and you just watch the same things that everyone watches. Like I get a kick out of thinking that a kid from Finland and a kid from Georgia and a kid from Kenya and a kid from somewhere in Mumbai might be geeking out on an MKBHD or Linus Tech Tips video if they're into tech, because that's my thing, but it's really cool. I don't know.
That's just the internet. It's allowed us. Yeah. You know, the other day, I have a podcast as well. I was looking at my stats and I was so confused. I was like, why do I have a big following from Russia? Like, what is there for them to be interested in my little podcast from this side of the world? It's such a connected universe nowadays. And, I remember there was this stat that one of the most pirated shows ever was Game of Thrones, right? I don't know if you watched Game of Thrones. Of course. It was huge here in Kenya. And I'm sure we were one of the biggest pirators pirate the show, because HBO wouldn't open up. We're willing to pay, right? But they don't open up to the rest of the world in a way for us to pay and watch it. So of course we have to steal it to to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so anytime an episode dropped, we were up late or it would be morning on our time watching the new Game of Thrones episode and things like that. It's really funny how connected the world is. Or even like now the world is talking about Kamala Harris being the new VP pick for Joe Biden. And
so that's something that is
talking about it here.
Yeah, that's something that you care about in Kenya, like American politics, I guess, throughout the world, everyone's looking at it. But
also because we're a very sophisticated people, we enjoy news. We have this word in Swahili called, there's this word in Swahili where like, mjuaji, like a know-it-all.
Okay.
And we like to know things. We like to know it all. If you get into Nairobi and you get an Uber to your hotel and they hear you flew in from Finland, the driver will be talking to you about, oh yes, maybe there's a Finnish noir show that I watch, or maybe there's Helsinki, and throw out facts. We like to know things as a country and be sophisticated in our knowledge. We're mjuajis. And so I think also that also is something a little unique to Kenya as compared to the rest of Africa. We're interested in what else is out there.
Really interesting. And just for the record, I wanted to ask you if you had Uber, but I thought it would be too silly. But I guess... Yeah, you answered it because you said you get into an Uber. You were talking. I feel I'm focusing on tech a little bit too much, but it's kind of what you do, and it feels like it is genuinely a big part of the Kenyan, I don't know, culture. As you said, the Silicon Savannah, and what you do is related to that because not only do you have your own podcast and your media company, but you also, as you mentioned, started the first podcast festival in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
Is podcast a big thing? Like, is it something that is as popular there as it is? I guess you're going to say yes, because you wouldn't have a podcast festival if it wasn't. But
yeah, you know, within Africa, radio is king. Right? That's the one medium that has always been in charge, radio. And so podcasting audio, of course, it's just a digital version of radio. And it's been growing very, very fast on the continent. Mm. I'll even give you like a statistic to surprise you. and I don't know if I'm allowed to share this. But anyway, for example, we are an Android country, continent, right? Android. Recently, I don't know if you know about like the Google PRX fellowship that they have, where they offer training, Google Podcasts, where they offer, it's this program where they where you apply and you can get like money and training for your podcast.
Oh, really?
And
no,
anyone
I didn't
from around the world can apply. Oh. And 25% of applicants were from Africa alone.
Really?
25%. And I think what's really interesting is because of how quote unquote easy it is to podcast, and because of how it allows for individual voices and individual topics to find their way, to sort of have a voice, I think it's really, really taking over. Nairobi specifically, in my opinion, is the podcasting capital of Africa, because just the number of people who are coming out with podcasts is it's ridiculous, Patrick. Every single day I'm hearing about new podcasts that are coming out. And people are just excited by the medium. They're excited about the creativity they can bring to it. They're excited that the barriers of entry are not as high. And for us, for me and some friends of mine, we realized, hey, like we need to help build the ecosystem around podcasting here, because what it takes to start a podcast in the US or in Europe is very different from what is needed to start a podcast here. You know, for example, Spotify is not even like I said, you need a VPN. It's not even open to majority of Africa. You can find it in South Africa. So then what does that mean for distribution, right? If distribution opportunities are not there for us, what does monetization mean for us? This is so many things that are just unique to not just Africa, but developing countries. And podcasting right now, the conversation around it tends to be within sort of very developed Western countries.
Right.
And so we decided, let's put together a festival, a meeting place of African podcasters for them to come connect, come up with ideas on how to grow the medium within our context, within our lives here within the continent. And the first one was just about to happen in March, and we had all these people flying in from all over the continent, and then our friend COVID came and disrupted.
It's only delayed. It's only delayed. I'm sure it will happen soon. I was going to say next year, but then maybe not the year after.
We never know. Yeah.
That's super interesting. And it's true that the barrier to entry being so much lower and the consumption being so easy, I'm sure makes it one of the biggest contenders for the media. I get market share. Podcasts can be a really strong one. I'm going to let you go soon, but there's one last thing I wanted to ask, and that's related to to what you do with Kali Media. You focus a lot on entrepreneurs, and particularly female entrepreneurs, and helping African women helping them develop their activities. I guess that question is, what's the social status of women? It's not like in the West we don't have issues there, certainly, but in Kenya, what's the position of women? How do they, you see what I mean.
Yeah, I think within Kenya, the traditional gender roles are still very strong, and patriarchy is still very strong as well. But what's also interesting is the amount of power and money and accessibility that women have today is unmatched as compared to any other time in our history. And so I started my media company, like you said, Kali Media, because you remember earlier, Patrick, when I said sometimes we consume the media you are consuming. So we have sometimes a distorted sense of our own country because we're consuming what other people are feeding us. It's the same way with how women are covered in the media. So here I'm telling you, this is the most powerful the women in my country have ever been today. But then the media and what they're, it doesn't reflect that. Doesn't tell that story. And so if you walk down the streets of Nairobi, if you see what young women are trying to do, attempting to do, building, it's just not as fully reflected. And I can throw numbers at you, but there's no need to do that. And so I was hoping that with my media company, I would show images and show storytelling around this new Kenyan, modern Kenyan woman, the woman who who lives in the Kenya that I've basically told you about. It's very many dichotomies happening within the country, but then is also still very much a traditional, she lives in the city, but can transition to her traditional life in the rural area. It's a woman who has her own job and has her own business and businesses, plural. But falls into the traditional expectations of being a mother and a wife and navigating that life. And I was hoping that with my media company, I'd be able to tackle or showcase some of that storytelling and some of that lifestyle that we're seeing today, because it's really unprecedented. And right now, the media one consumes really tells you all you need to know about our society. And if our media is not matching up to where society is, then, you know, there's an issue there. Yeah. But it's if you have certain privileges, you make your own money, live within a particular social construct within Kenya, then the power you have as a woman is really, really great in Kenya.
Mm. You sound so positive and hopeful. I don't know. It's somehow contagious. I'm feeling you.
No, I agree. It's a great time to be in Africa. It is a great time. There's a reason I left the U.S. Well, you know, the U.S. is really going through its own problems right now. But the opportunities here, it's as if we're on the precipice of so much change, and people feel it. It's in the air. It's palpable. We just don't know what's coming at the end of the day. Even with something like COVID, that is so terrible and is changing people's lives, there's just so much opportunity politically, socially, economically. There's just so much change coming, and it's change on our own terms as Kenyans and as Africans. Yes, we're connected to the world. We're influenced by what's happening in the world, but the ownership of our lives and what we want to do with our lives is something that's it's new, it's different, and the product of that is showing. So, you know, in Nairobi, on every night, because Nairobi does not sleep, honestly, every night there's you can go to shows, you can go to concerts, you can go to, there's so much happening, and it's so local. It's our music, it's our film, it's our news, it's our technology, and it's good. And yes, I'm positive. I'm excited. I'm really exciting myself talking about it. It's really a good time to be in Kenya and a good time to be in Africa, as so much change will be coming over the next few decades.
Well, that is really a pleasure to hear. And thank you so much for spending that roughly an hour with me and with us, telling us about all of this. I feel like I have a slightly different outlook on Kenya after talking to you, and that's probably for the better. So thanks so much. Is there anything you want to add, either about the country that we didn't cover that you feel is important to say, or just telling us about yourself and what you do before we close off the show?
No, I think we covered everything, but I welcome you, Patrick, and your wife, and everyone listening to Kenya to come see for yourselves as soon as things open up, of course. They can even reach out to me, and I'll probably meet them at the airport. Who knows? You're all very welcome to come visit and see what I'm talking about and see, and you'll see it as soon as you land, even while you're sitting in traffic. You'll be able to see what I'm talking about. But we have the saying, Karibu Kenya, welcome to Kenya. Please come visit.
You know what? I'm going to try to make it happen, actually. We have a young son, so maybe not right away, but at some point I think it would be really great. So I think that's the takeaway from all of this. You're making me want to go visit Kenya, which I wasn't necessarily interested in before. So thank you very much. I will include a link to your Twitter account in the show notes, as I always do. So if you want to hear more about what Paula does, please go and check that out. And I'm Not Patrick on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere. And of course, you can support the show at patreon.com/thePhileas Club. And if this show exists, it's because so many of you already do. So if you want the show to, if you appreciate the show, if you enjoy what we do, then please do consider going to patreon.com/thefidesclub. The link is also in the show notes, and pledging a little bit of money towards the production of the show. And thank you so much to those that already do. And thank you so much to you, Paula. It was amazing chatting with you. So thanks very much, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And for the other ones listening, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks or so. Bye.